for joining us this morning. I think by now everybody's aware of the incident in D.C. Our condolences go out to the law enforcement families and all the families who lost loved ones and are still struggling with injuries that resulted from the trumped-up terror attack on our democracy. And just a reminder, if you're interested in applying with Tucson Police, the deadline is Monday. And please be respectful of the people around you and wear a mask. Really, at this point, it's just common sense. Our guest today is Drug Enforcement Agent, Special Agent, Michelle Smith. Michelle, can you hear me?
Can. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. We have a bazillion questions to ask you because you're kind of unique in your field. Tell us about you and what got you involved with law enforcement to begin with.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I feel like I started as a kid. I remember asking for a pair of binoculars for Christmas just so I could take on my neighbors. I was always so nosy. But I grew up in Florida. I went to college there, and I was so fortunate in my last semester in college, I got an internship with a local agency, and it was specific to their narcotics department, their unit. I had so many eye-opening experiences there that I decided to join law enforcement, and I went to the academy.
And finally, which academy? Which academy?
It was just a local Escambia County Sheriff's Office. It was just what the local department puts on for you.
Okay.
So I stayed as a student assistant that entire time, just making $5 an hour just to go through the academy, but to stay with the Sheriff's Office. And then in 2009, I finally got hired. And just with that internship, it really helped me get into the narcotics unit when I got hired. So I did narcotics for 6 years, and then I transferred to homicide, which was like my career goal ever. And then finally got hired with DEA in 2017.
So when you were a little girl, did you think, gee, I want to work homicide?
I always had that, like, again, nosy. I just wanted to know how and why things happened or the reasons for why someone would do that. So,
yeah.
And I was just so intrigued with forensics. I just loved everything about it. And, you know, CSI got me and all that kind of stuff growing up, for sure.
We didn't have that when I was little. I grew up, I wanted to be Sammy Davis Jr. It didn't work out, but,
well,
you know.
Great now.
So, your influence, obviously, was you did this internship. Was the internship with the Drug Enforcement Agency?
No, it was just with a local group. I mean, I didn't really know about DEA then, you know. But that internship, you got to see the guys in the unit working with DEA and other federal agencies. And you're like, oh, so there's more out there, you know.
More to
there's
this.
Bigger and better things. Yeah. And that was just, I got to do things as an intern that I never thought I'd get to do. They trusted me. They gave me assignments. And it was awesome that they had confidence in me to do that.
What kind of assignments did you get as an intern?
So I was really big into methamphetamine cases at the time. That's when, so in Florida, people making meth in their backyard and in cars and stuff was huge. It's not like the meth that we're getting from Mexico these days, but that was the days when you'd go to the pharmacy and you'd have to sign the book for any kind of Sudafed. And so I would literally go to every pharmacy in town, take pictures of all the logbooks, make this Excel spreadsheet, and put people together for conspiracies. And I remember they had let me skip a day of the academy because they were doing this huge takedown, and I don't know how they were able to swing it, but I got to miss a day at the law enforcement academy to be a part of all the takedowns and get to see what we had developed this entire time. It was really cool to see.
Oh, wow. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, they let me go on search warrants and, I mean, everything. It was just really eye-opening.
So that experience, you took all that experience to the sheriff's department then?
Oh, yeah. And it was, at the time, like, females are just a commodity, you know. There's not very many of us. And I was the only female for years until we finally got some more in. But it just, go ahead.
Explain how is it being a female working in a male-dominated environment? Because I think females bring a different perspective to everything.
Oh, of course. I always joke, you know, in college, I was a sorority girl. In my eyes, I was a classy sorority girl. And then I come to hang out with all these boys every time. I'm just, like, ruined. But I joke about it. But they're brothers you never wanted sometimes. They're a great group of guys, and they teach you a lot. And I think a lot of things that I've learned over time, and I've actually had this conversation with another female agent, but there's this confidence gap that you hear about sometimes. And sometimes you think, like, as a female, you lack self-confidence in what your male peers do, and you kind of lose out on chances of success, you know. But you just kind of apply yourself and know that you can do everything they can do. You just take your extra time to train or get knowledge of whatever the topic is, and you just insert yourself and be along for the ride and do everything they do.
Yeah, that's something I think a lot of, especially my generation, you weren't expected to be able to do anything. You're right, expected to get married, have kids, cook, clean, and that was what you're expected to do. So to get interested in law enforcement and to in just the legal field, period, you know, it was just something that was really unique. So while you're going through the academy, and I want to hear all about the academy, because it's not like going to the academy for TPD. And I know, you know, that's a 6-month academy. Tell me about the academy and your experience there. And how many women were in the academy with you?
So our academy is 18 weeks long. I don't know if that's changed a little bit since COVID, but it's in Quantico, Virginia. It consists of classroom, firearms, defensive tactics, interviewing, scenarios, practicals, PT, obviously. And it was tough. I mean, they really put you to the test. It was definitely harder than the academy I'd been to previously. And there weren't very many girls. There's always, I believe there were 7 of us. But it's interesting because you always run across people with, like, everybody has a story. And sometimes you think to yourself, like, I was prior law enforcement. There was some prior law enforcement in the class of military, but some of these women are, like, stay-at-home moms and just work jobs. You're like, man, what made you pick law enforcement?
And so especially the DEA.
Right. And I'm just like, it just was eye-opening, and it was just really cool to see, like, the transition from I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom to I'm going to be the police, and I'm going to do this and put bad guys in jail. And it's really cool to see. But we didn't have a lot of females. That's usually what it is. There's just not very many.
Are the females expected to meet the same standards as the males in each category?
So qualifications, I guess, for the most part, like besides physical fitness, that's usually gender-based, but I think that's pretty much across the board for
all agencies.
Yeah. So besides physical fitness, no. I mean, we do the same classroom. We're doing the same defensive tactics, wrestling with each other and, you know, depending on your weight or whatever, keeping up with them, and you take the punches along with everybody else's punches, and you're doing the same firearm. So there's not really any qualifications besides doing everything that they're doing, which kind of makes you feel strong as a woman anyway. You're like, I can do what the boys are doing, you know?
Yes. And probably better.
Absolutely. That's just my opinion.
And they just all turned off their radios. Okay, you said firearms. The different agencies have different issues regarding firearms, or do they all issue the same weapon?
I know DEA, what I carry is the Glock 17. I know for sure, like, Border Patrol has a different weapon. I'm not sure on the specifics of them, but I don't know. I'm sure it's all to what each agency prefers.
I think the FBI uses that too.
Yeah, I love a Glock. I learned on a Glock, and I'm just too scared to change it from anything else.
Yeah, you get used to something, and you need to stick with it if it works for you.
Absolutely.
So when you go to the shooting range, what do you have to score out of how many?
Oh, gosh. So it's a 50-round course, and obviously it's different if you want to do a firearms instructor or just training at the academy. If I want to, say it's like a 40, don't quote me, I could be wrong, so in the 40s, like 42, 43, but it's a great course. They incorporate not just like shooting and by standing, like your walk, moving and shooting, and stuff that it kind of applies to what we're doing in everyday scenarios.
I've been to Quantico as a guest.
Mm-hmm.
Is it called Hogan's Alley?
Yes, that is phenomenal. It's great.
I wanted to do that. They wouldn't let me.
Yeah. They really put in a lot of thought and effort into creating that. When you're walking through it, especially for training purposes, they have, because when you're going there, you're like, you never know where you're going when you leave there, as far as like places in the country. But they're very strategic as far as they built apartments, they built houses in the north have basements. I'd never seen that before. And all kinds of different types of houses that are around the country that you don't really think about. And they really did a great job as far as training to incorporate different scenarios, because you just never know where you're going to go.
Yeah, I thought that was fast. They were using it when we were there, and it was just fascinating to see how they, you know, train people for active situations, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
you know, it would be so easy if everything was the same, but it isn't.
Never, ever, ever, ever.
Yeah, unfortunately, we would be better prepared for sure.
But it keeps you on your toes. Because you know it's not going to be the same, so be ready for something different every time.
So, does DEA get called out on active shooter situations? I don't think I've ever.
Well, so you know, local law enforcement obviously is going to be the first to respond,
right.
And if they ever need help, I wouldn't put it past DEA to send our troops out there to help as well. I mean, we helped with some of the rioting stuff here, or at least up in Phoenix. So any opportunity that our locals need help from us, absolutely.
Does DEA do ride-alongs?
Not to my knowledge. however, that was one thing that changed every perspective I had of what I thought I wanted to do in law enforcement.
Who'd you do a ride-along with?
So when I was going through my internship, I decided to do, there was a guy in my class who was a local officer going through the college classes. And so I did a ride along with him, and there was two agencies in my area where I lived. And I knew I wanted to do forensics. Like, I loved the crime scenes and autopsies. So I thought I wanted to be a crime scene tech. So I remember going to a call where it was a natural death. The guy had died from a heart attack, but when we arrived on scene and crime scene was doing what they were doing, it was like a lot of measuring, a lot of taking pictures. I was like, oh, this is not for me. Like, it was not the hustle and bustle, like chasing somebody and all that I...
Jumping fences.
Yeah. And so I was like, okay, crime scene's definitely not for me. I want to be an officer. I want to do the fun stuff, the car chases, chasing people and talking to people. It was just, that was more my speed versus measuring. And not that the crime scene girls are great. That was just not for me.
Not your cup of tea. It takes all that in order to win the case in court.
Absolutely. But that's why I really encourage, even just starting at your local department, if doing ride-alongs will really open your eyes to what really happens. I mean, you see the worst of the worst, but the best of the best. You meet some of the most different people you'll ever meet in your life, and you'll see if this job is something that you're actually interested in.
So I know that the both agencies you worked for, you only worked for two, right?
Yeah, the local group in DEA, yeah.
Okay, I know they both had driving and pursuit courses.
Yes.
So tell me how it compared.
Wow. So as a local, it was really fun. They did all the training, and my first day I'm out of training, I'm by myself, and I got into a car chase. Of course, I was like 10 and 2, just trying to keep up with everybody. You get the worst car when you're the new person, so I'm trying to keep up.
Honda Civic, or what was it?
It was an old Crown Vic.
Oh.
I could just hear the engine rumbling. You know, it's just like, just keep up, stay in the pack. And I, even though I didn't have any kind of part in it besides being in the back of the pack. It was still so fun, and it was that adrenaline dump that's crazy. But our department then was just, they kind of nixed. Pursuits were very hard to get involved in anymore because just of the safety of the community, which I totally understand, you know. But the academy here, like, it was great with DEA. I mean, he did, he had to do a timed course, which was so hard because there's all these cones and you feel like the lanes are like so skinny and you're having to back up and go forward. And it was really fun. I liked the DEA pursuit course.
And every time you run over a cone, you just wiped out a citizen.
Yeah, it's a deduction. And you really put it into perspective. And I don't know. I think I'm a great driver now. My fiance will say different, but I know in my head, I'm like, well, I'm at least tactically trained.
Is he in the law enforcement industry as well?
No, he's not. I actually learned that lesson long ago, but he's, which makes it perfect for us because I know it works for some people, but it didn't work for me. I always thought like dating law enforcement would, they would understand the job better because especially coming up in the world of law enforcement, male dominated. I was always single, never married, no kids. So I was married to the job. So anytime there was an opportunity to work, I was working.
Yeah.
But
I did that.
It's not the case. I realize that he's wonderful. He's actually in the car business. I'm totally different. So that works for us.
Yeah. Because if you're both in law enforcement, you have an argument, you're both armed. It's not cool.
Yeah, I mean, you have to see him every day at the office. Like, not, definitely not cool.
True that. Okay, I want to know the difference between going through a local training academy as opposed to something that's a more national level.
Mm-hmm.
What is?
Go ahead.
No, you.
So as a local, obviously all the local ones are different. The one that I went to was more of like a college-y classroom kind of environment. You do your classroom portion, but you'd also do like the physical fitness. But I hear some of the ones even around here are like more military style, which I think is great too. So going to the DEA, it's kind of military-ish, I guess, as far as like regiment and I mean, they'll wake you up in the middle of the night and, you know, get you running miles and miles and miles. Like, you need to be prepared when you go there, mentally and physically, for sure.
Yeah, don't just show up.
No. Never just show up because you'll be hurting the entire time. But I think it's great. I mean, it keeps you in check. I like the regiment of it, honestly.
Yeah, it does keep you in check. When you go through these courses, through the academies, do they offer college credit?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, I know if you go through Tucson or the Sheriff's Department here, you get college credit for going through those courses.
That's amazing. Like that, I didn't have that opportunity, but I am also newer to Tucson, so I'm not super familiar with local agencies, but I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I was wondering if DEA offered, like a continuing ed. You have to have a college degree to get into DEA, don't you?
College degree, or I believe your police experience, if you have prior police experience, will also equivalent to that.
Okay. So I know you have to have a college degree to get into the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
So
I believe so.
I just thought maybe the agencies were the same. I know you don't have to. And if you go to Border Patrol, they also offer college credit for going through their training. So
I think that's great.
How many months of training does DEA offer you?
So it's 18 weeks. Lucky me, I was in DC like in September through February, so it's definitely the cold time. So not only is it tough, it depends on if you're going through the summer or the winter. So it's either going to be super hot or super cold.
So plan ahead if you're going to apply.
Plan ahead.
But the thing is, you don't get to choose. If you put your application in, it's going to take a while to be processed.
Oh, yeah. I was in the hiring process for almost 3 years, and you take that first opportunity. When they call you, you're going.
Do they put you on the lie box?
The lie box?
What is it called?
Polygraph? Yeah, absolutely.
We all called it the lie box.
That's hilarious. I hadn't heard it called that. Yeah. several.
You're not from Chicago.
I'm from the South.
Yeah, no, we called it the lie box.
Yep, definitely lots of that. I mean, you couldn't have done anything and you still feel nervous going in there. It's just part of it, I guess.
Yeah, it is. And I know it's not a one and done, and a lot of people think, you know, oh, I passed the polygraph, it's okay. Periodically, they'll pull you in for a polygraph. Do they do the same thing in DEA?
I'm not sure about that. No? I have not been pulled in. I mean, I'd be ready for one, but I haven't heard of anything like that. But that's not to say it's not unheard of. So I don't know, to be honest with you.
Okay. We're learning a lot about this. In Quantico, all their training is in Quantico. You don't, like, have other places around the country where you would go for training?
Well, for DEA Academy specific, it's at Quantico, but DEA does offer a lot of training opportunities that are other places, which is great. I went to a great money laundering class in Seattle that another program put on, but through DEA offered it, and they offer training is amazing.
I want to do a show on money laundering.
It's great. I mean, especially being down here, because you know, all the drug money comes back through here, through Tucson and back to Mexico. And you need to know about it. You just have to take the time to learn it.
I think people in the mortgage industry, especially, closing agents, certified closing agents, which is what I do, mm-hmm. need to be able to recognize what's going on when they
Absolutely.
See it and not necessarily stop it at the closing table, but be able to... fill out the suspicious activity report and give it to the right agency so it can be followed up.
Right. There's always a pattern that you can identify.
Exactly.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Okay. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in a few.
Daylight is fading and the temperature is dropping. You're not only cold, hungry, and lost in a densely wooded area, you're injured. Time is of the essence. SARCI is a highly trained team of dedicated volunteers who work closely with Pima County Search and Rescue to help people in critical situations just like this. To join an exclusive team of heroes, go to sarci.org. That's SARCI.org. We need your knowledge, experience, and of course, your generous spirit.
Hi, I'm Maya Thompson, producer for the Law Matters live show that airs Saturday mornings at 8, when our listeners ask questions of the people who have answers. On our next show, be ready to take notes. Megan Paulos from University High School prepares us for the college application process, and Constitution experts and lawyers discuss the storming of the United States Capitol building and potential consequences. Check out Law Matters on iTunes, Google Play, and of course, lawmatters1030.org. Now get your questions ready and join our conversation at 790-2040.
Hi, this is Sherry. If you think your current interest rate is high and refinancing is on your mind, give me a call at 520-310-9900. Maybe you're thinking about purchasing a new home while rates are low. Give me a call at 520-310-9900. Perhaps you just want to know how a reverse mortgage can improve your life. Give me a call at 520-310-9900. I can help you with all your mortgage needs, and I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks.
This is Nathan Chabon, producer for Law Matters. I have a goal to reach and I need your help. I want to put the DEA out of business. That's right, the Drug Enforcement Agency. If you have an addiction problem or know someone who does, please reach out to lawmatters1030.org and click the DEA tab for more information. Reaching out is the first step. We have the resources if you have the will. You can beat this demon and help me put the Drug Enforcement Agency out of business.
To report suspected human trafficking, please call the National Human Trafficking Resource Center at 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP or INFO to 233-733. To learn more about Homeland Security investigations and our efforts to combat human trafficking, please visit our website at www.ice.gov or check out the DHS Blue Campaign at www.dhs.gov/bluecampaign. For more information on the Southern Arizona Anti-Trafficking Unified Response Network, please visit us at www.saturn.org or find us on Facebook.
Thanks for staying with us. Our guest today is Drug Enforcement Agent, Special Agent Michelle Smith. And I want to talk about, what kind of cases do you like working?
Oh, wow. So I really enjoy working overdose cases. It really gives you an opportunity to team up with the local agencies and what they're dealing with, as well as what, you know, we're dealing with across the country with overdoses on the rise. And it kind of also makes like, my experience with working narcotics and homicide. But there was a case I worked years ago that really put things into perspective for me. We were on a wiretap listening to a dealer in the area, and he'd be privy to all these phone calls that were coming in of these addicts who were just so desperate, you know, you hear it in their voice, but the dealer was like so ugly to them. Like he would just treat them so terribly. And it was really hard to listen to. Number one, you think as a person, like, how can you deal with that? But at the same time, they're just desperate and don't really care how they're treated. So when the prosecution time came around, you know, you get to meet these families of these addicts. And unfortunately, we had one of the addicts overdose during the prosecution phase. And these are like normal people and real families that, you know, they didn't have a bad childhood. They're your everyday family that just, you know, came across like the wrong thing, but and tried something one time. But it really puts you in a perspective. And with the overdoses on the rise, like DEA has done an awesome job of teaming up with the United States Attorney's Office to get more aggressive in prosecuting these cases and holding the dealers and the suppliers more accountable for stuff like that. But besides overdose cases, I've teamed up with our local postal guys that postal inspectors, and we work a bunch of package cases. You'd be surprised like how much stuff travels across country through our mail system. So we have a fantastic postal inspector here, and eye-opening for sure.
Do you have a dog? A canine?
Yes, we use the locals, guys. We don't have any with DEA, at least in our group, but another reason to team up with the locals for sure. They're always willing and available.
And they have the best dogs.
They do. Need to bring that training at home.
So
it's impressive.
What would you say to the person who says they know that one of their children is selling drugs, that it's okay, he's just selling it, he's not taking it?
No, the sad part is like these dealers are benefiting monetarily from what they're selling, but at the same time ruining the lives of families. And you're not innocent because you're not taking it, or you're just as guilty. And you think about, if these addicts didn't have access to it, would they still be alive today? You know, all these overdoses that we experience.
Well, that's my thing. If somebody dies because you sold them drugs, aren't you responsible for that death?
Absolutely, and that's why we're taking these cases to get prosecuted. And there have been some successful ones, and not every overdose case is just the reality of it is, unfortunately, but not every overdose case is able to be prosecuted.
Yeah,
there's evidence that we need. Yeah, there's evidence that we need to make sure we get everything included to be able to prosecute the dealers. But we've had things like the stars aligned on some cases, and one that I know of, like the dealer, we had information, like the dealer was warning the user, like, don't take too much of it. So, you know, their knowledge of it, it could potentially harm them. And it did, unfortunately, but it's eye-opening. I love that. That's what DEA is about. Like, we're all about getting the bigger fish. It's not necessarily the users. Like, we want the ones who are supplying and dealing and affecting our communities.
What do you think the El Chapo family business will ever be put out of business?
Well, you know, since old El Chapo is sentenced to life in prison, less than 30 years, like, although he's gone, it's unfortunate, but it's the way, as long as the U.S. is having the demand for narcotics, the cartels are going to continue to provide the supply. And someone just takes El Chapo's place, which is fine because we'll just get that person next, you know?
Yeah.
When you take one off the street, it just, unfortunately, it just, the next person fills in.
So you're not going to go out of business anytime soon?
You'd want to think that you do, but no, they definitely keep us busy. And and that's fine. It's a constant cat and mouse game, and a lot of us love the chase of it, and we'll do it.
So I know the Drug Enforcement Agency also tries to help people get off the drugs and do what they need to do to be healthy again and make their families whole again. Tell me about some of the programs that they have.
So just for like one of my most favorite programs, and it's the Drug Take Back program. They do it twice a year. I know we've only gotten to do it October of this year because of COVID and everything, but it was like record numbers. I think they ended up getting like 403 tons of prescriptions.
Oh my goodness.
That's a lot. And you think about
that's a lot.
Yeah. So there's information on that on DEA.gov. It kind of guides you. If a lot of people just will either wait for the drug take back program, but there's also things you can do throughout the year. I know on that website also they have recommendations on how to do at-home disposal from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration as well as the Environmental Protection Agency. And then there's also over 11,000 authorized collection agencies around you. You literally just go on the website, type in your city and state in a mile radius. I did it last night, and there's six or seven around me just in a five-mile radius. Walgreens, common places, hospitals and stuff. But in the meantime, our big thing is to just keep your medication safe and secure. Like, people break in for your medications. Your own family will steal these medications, and until they can be disposed of, definitely lock them up. You don't have to wait to the next drug take-back day, but you can. It's never too late to find other resources out there.
And I think our sheriff department as well as TPD has a drug disposal in their lobby.
Yes, which is even better. Like, there's so many places.
That's always there. You don't have to worry about it. And I think people, that's something that, you know, I'm guilty. You don't think about cleaning out your medicine cabinet.
No, it's never really been a thing until, like, prescriptions have, like, come on the radar as being one of, like, the deadliest things.
You kids know, experimenting with grandma's meds. That's not cool.
It's just scary because, you know, prescription pills at one point, like just coming from Florida, we were well known for the pill mill places and stuff. But when you think you're being prescribed prescriptions from a pharmacist or a doctor and getting them from a pharmacy and stuff, you feel safe in the fact that you know where it's coming from and, oh, it's just prescription meds. Well, now we're dealing with fentanyl pills that look just like what your prescription meds look like, and those are so dangerous. You know, you don't know what you're getting with those.
Yeah.
So it's nothing safe anymore, you know, not even in a pill bottle, I feel like.
Yeah, and I remember years ago there was an incident where somebody was tampering with, I think it was Tylenol, and it was a big deal, and some people died from it. It was ugly. But I want to know more about where have you been stationed since you've been in DEA?
So Tucson has been my first duty station, which I love. I came out here by myself, which was scary after just being in your hometown for forever, it seems like. But the adventure of coming out here to something brand new, I actually feel super fortunate to be coming out of the academy as a new agent to a border area. It's the tip of the spear here. Like, you're getting everything handed to you here. I mean, everything starts here. So,
do they still call it Cocaine Alley, or do we have a new nickname?
I feel like we're on a new path to a new nickname. It's definitely methamphetamine and these fentanyl pills are probably the most popular. So we'll have to come up with a new name for us, for our area.
Okay, we'll put our heads together.
Yeah, something creative, but it's awesome here. It's a great first place to start for sure.
Do you have the ability to go overseas with your job? Like, the FBI goes everywhere. Do you go everywhere?
The opportunities with DEA are so endless. Again, it's such a pro to be down here by the border because your cases start here and they go all across the country. I know I've been to several places, Savannah, Detroit, Miami, back to Mexico City to follow up with my cases because you follow where the drugs go. So from here to the drugs are shipped to, let's say, Detroit or get transported to Detroit area, they DEA allows you to follow up with all that. It's your case. You worked it. You go meet other agents and work with other agents and agents and agencies really in Detroit, and you wrap up your case there. But then you also wrap up the people that are sending all the drug proceeds back to Tucson. So DEA gives you a lot of opportunities. And I know like DEA has like 91 foreign offices in 68 countries, or just for places to work out of, like Africa, Caribbean, Europe, Far East, Middle East, you name it. DEA expands, and there's so many opportunities with DEA.
So do you get to request where you want to go next?
Yeah, it's a I don't want to go anywhere anytime soon. I really fell in love with the desert. But, yeah, you can. There's always a list that comes out of places that are looking to be filled. And once your time is available and you want to go somewhere else and try something new, then, yeah, you can apply for that. And, of course, you're applying with everybody else who wants to go, too. So it's always tough sometimes, but a lot of people move. And since I've been here, I know a lot of people from my office here have gotten some really cool places.
You said when your time is up, are you required to stay in one location for a certain amount of time?
There's a minimum, especially as a new agent coming out. But like I said, I love it here, and I'll definitely stay for as long as they'll let me.
As long as they'll let me.
But I also enjoy the newness, and like when you're here and you're at the tip of the spear, essentially, and you're learning all this stuff about the border life and the cartels and how everything's coming in through here. I mean, eventually one day I would love to take what I'm learning here to, I don't know, maybe somewhere on the East Coast or in the South or wherever, and like teach other agents like what I've learned here, and you just pass your knowledge, because it's, unless you've been here, like it's interesting.
Do they bring experienced agents to the academy to teach? Do they have to have certain experience with maybe high-profile cases in order to do that, or just their experience in general?
Not necessarily as far as high-profile, but experience for sure. I mean, just DEA, so it's small, but it's huge. I mean, people come from all over, and their backgrounds as far as like what they did before DEA to being in DEA, and all that experience brings knowledge, and you just pass it on. But I mean, nothing specific as far as high profile, but everybody's got some knowledge to pass on.
Yeah, everybody's got some experience in something. I'm just amazed every time I talk to an agent from all the agencies. I'm learning things every day, and you know, you can't help but learn stuff. Okay,
and that's one more. That's the beauty of DEA too. Is like we are so diverse. Like I said, we have stay-at-home moms, car salesmen, people from all different backgrounds that come to DEA that use their own life experience to work cases in such a different aspect that you'd never expect.
Explain that.
So I'm just in the law enforcement mentality because I just have prior law enforcement, but people who come from the different backgrounds and of what they did before their careers with DEA, they make you look at things in a different way. Like, well, what if we tried this without getting into too much of our techniques, but
right.
What if we tried this or tried something this way? And then you teach them something, and along the way, they are most definitely teaching you something. And it broadens your perspective of things you can do instead of doing the same things you've always known to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense, because a stay-at-home mom who's raising a bunch of kids decides to get into law enforcement is going to have a different viewpoint than somebody who's been in law enforcement
Absolutely.
All their life. And an attorney is going to bring a different perspective, because they're looking at it from, how am I going to defend this in court, or how am I going to prosecute that in court? And sometimes I think people lose sight of the fact that in order to prosecute, you need a lot of evidence, and you need to be able to prove it in front of a judge. So
absolutely.
It's,
especially at the federal level, you need to make sure you're all squared away with what you're presenting to attorneys and judges, for sure.
That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the websites that you guys have, or you know, links that people can go to get more information about the drug programs. I know we've got some of them on our website, but tell me about your website.
So DA.gov is pretty much a one-stop shop. It's got everything you need to know if that you're looking for academy, drug take-back programs, recruitment. It's got our PT standards if you're interested in going to the academy. That's a really good place to start.
Let me ask you about that. Your physical requirements, are they the same as the FBI?
Yes. In fact, we just recently, when I first came through, I was taking the PT test that DEA had, and then before I got hired, it had just changed to the FBI one.
Was it more difficult or easier?
They both have their pros and cons. Like, I remember, like, with the original one, there was it's like a shuttle run thing through some cones, and you had to start on your back, and you had to get up real quick and run down and run back. But FBI has got a 300-meter sprint that's tough. You're, like, running your hardest halfway around the track. It's tough, but it's doable for sure. You train for it. You got it.
Yeah, I don't know if people notice that you always have FBI agents running. They're constantly running because it's not like you can pass the physical when you start and that's it. You have to keep doing it.
And throughout the academy, you stay running. You just, because it's constant. I mean, these instructors are super fit. I'm pretty sure mine had 0% body fat, and he put us to the test. And you had to keep up with him, and lots of running for sure.
Do you have to climb a wall too?
There were some walls involved, not mandatory, but as part of like our PT session one day, and with all your gear on at that. And was a tough one. I'm not going to lie for me. Don't have the best upper body strength, but I got over it eventually with the help of my teammates. So I won't forget that day for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's something else that people, you know, you're not out there by yourself. You're out there as a team. And even when various agencies are working together, they're out there as a team to reach one goal. And that's stop people from taking drugs.
Yeah.
Stop selling them.
No man ever gets left behind when you're on a team, for sure. So that's awesome.
Yeah, one of my producers trying to put DEA out of business.
Which I can appreciate. And I almost hope that it happens. But, man, they're going to run for our money around here for sure.
Yeah.
I'm just definitely busy. But so, go ahead.
No, what else is on your website? What else can we find?
Anything you want to know about DEA is definitely on that website. But I also recommend some other ones like drugabuse.gov. They have several articles to read. Some are specific to specific ages, like teenagers, college kids, etc. I think it's really important to keep up with the emerging drug trends. I remember when I was doing undercover and Molly came out, and I'm like, what's Molly? You know, and I really had to do my research before I went and purchased it because I don't know what it's supposed to look like. I'd hate to be the one that buys it and, you know, gets called out from a drug dealer because I don't know what I'm buying or what it does to you. But
what is it?
So Molly was like it's a synthetic drug, and it was big like in the clubs and stuff like that. It kind of mimics MDMA a little bit, but it comes in different way, in different forms. I think during the days when I purchased it, it was like these clear shards, like in a capsule. And it's like also a pill. Like you have to keep up with it, especially when you're a parent, and it's hard to keep up with kids these days already. I can imagine with technology, it's hard to keep up. But if you stay on top of all these drug trends and you see something in your child's room or you hear about something, you'll know what they're talking about, you know? That website's really good with, I looked at it, and it's pretty good with what's emerging right now. Just think twice.gov is a really good one, too, as far as keeping up with the trends and stuff. What's out there. Just think twice.gov.
Oh, okay. And what's on that one?
They offer, like, real stories of addicts and, like their stories and how they got into it and how they sought help. There's education again for parents and for kids. And I think they do a really good job of, you know, obviously right now marijuana is an interesting topic, but some people think it's not a big deal, but they have some pretty good education on it that shows otherwise, you know?
And I think that's part of the thing is educating the parents. And their parents are so busy nowadays in social media, and the kids are so astute to what's mm-hmm. going on, and they know everything. And the parents are just, you know, how do you keep up with that? You need to, because it's constantly evolving. Just like, you know, we talked about the human trafficking. There's so many things that are changing constantly. That same thing's happening in the drug industry. And you can't just look at it once and say, have that one conversation with your child. You have to keep up just like they're keeping up. Keep pace with your kids. Or try to be a pace or two ahead of your kids.
Mm-hmm.
If that's possible.
I would definitely stay on these websites and see what the new things are. And I feel like majority of these drugs now are often packaged or for sale or mimic, like, something that just catches the eye of kids more, you know? The colors, the designs on them, you know?
They're marketed
like that.
To kids, absolutely.
Yeah. So you have to be careful about what you're finding if you see something or anything that your kids might have. But it starts with education. It starts with the young ones, and you just have to pass the education on.
What about vaping? Is vaping still a thing? Because I know that for a while there, they could get anything and be vaping it, you know, doing drugs through vaping.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, any way to conceal it. And that's, I know for a fact that drugabuse.gov and justthinktwice.gov also offer stories on the vaping and stuff and what to look for.
What would you look for if you were, you know, of course, you're always looking for it. What do you look for?
I mean, I know, like, one of the most popular thing is just to put, like, the marijuana oil and stuff like that. Granted, it is what it is in Arizona, but federally, marijuana is still illegal for our system. So that's a tough one as far as, I mean, that's what they're using it for the concealing and God knows what else, because there's so many of these drugs now are man-made and they're getting creative. And that's the scary part is they're getting really creative. And like I said, just like with technology, you have to keep up with these trends. So besides like marijuana oil, I'm not super sure what else they would vape at this time, but that's, again, I could go on these websites myself and just keep up too.
Yeah, and it's not an easy job. I know they use the emojis to communicate with each other, and the emojis mean something different to them than it means to us. Yeah. And you can't take it for face value.
Yes. It's hard to keep up. That's when I knew I was getting old. I was like trying to keep up with these young ones.
Yeah. So if you were going to talk to a prospective somebody who's thinking about getting into law or law enforcement, what would you say to that person?
Oh, besides, like, definitely do it. I would just definitely say, ask questions, reach out to our recruiters. If there's just endless amount of answers that we have to provide and give you insight and see if this is something you really want to do. I would really encourage, doing right. Unfortunately, we don't do ride-alongs, but the locals do. And man, you get an open eye perspective for sure on what's happening. And I would just say, start there. See if this is something you really want to get into, because this is a calling. It's not for everybody. I said earlier, like, we see the worst of the worst, but we also see some of the best of the best. We change lives. Lives change ours. It's a lot, and you have to be able to lay your life down for your partner, you know, and that's something that we signed up for. And I would just be sure this is something you want to do and ask questions and reach out and just see what it's all about.
Once you're accepted for the academy, do they have anybody that actually quits because it's too tough?
So in my group, like, we didn't, I feel like everybody was really strong that went there. They do a really good job of recruiting as far as that goes. The only reason why we lost anybody was just for if they couldn't pass one of the qualifications, whether it be PT or firearms. But you need to show up ready. If you're failing because of PT, you need to show up ready. That just says you just weren't ready to come yet.
And you know what? There's no excuse, because the social media has all this good stuff too, not just, you know, the dark stuff. You can go on social media and see what the requirements are. And you know, there are sample exams you could take. You can see what the PT is and work up to it. Don't show up with a bag of chips in your hand.
Well, it's not a surprise test when you get there. You are more than prepared when you get there. There's plenty of things you could do. You're right. There's so many ways of training that you can do that you can search anywhere, Instagram, Facebook, whatever it is. Definitely no excuse. And I think I like that they stress the importance of PT because you carry that through your whole career. Like you being in good physical fitness, like that's life or death for you or for your partner. You need to be able to keep up, chase people, fight if you have to fight, and protect yourself and the other ones around you.
And you need to be in good mental fitness as well.
Absolutely.
You need to go in with the right attitude. You need to know that you're going to be out there saving lives, fighting crime. They don't issue capes, do they?
Unfortunately not.
They should. They should issue capes. Yeah. Because sometimes I think the youth today think that, you know, somebody else will swoop in and they've got a cape and, you know, they'll save the day, when it's actually just regular people like you and me go in and become a cape crusader.
Absolutely.
For DEA. And John's looking at me. He's like, <"What?"> So John is he handles all the audio. If we say something he doesn't like, he turns our mic off. So we have to be really careful here.
So, hopefully he didn't mute me the whole time.
Yeah, you've been muted. I'm sorry. So, okay. When do they do recruiting? Is it open all the time or is there like TPD, Monday's the last day to apply at TPD? Do they have a deadline?
No, and you can get all those questions answered for sure from the DEA.gov site, but I know we are definitely trying to, we have a recruiter in Phoenix, so if there's any questions for sure, please reach out. But I know the recruitment program, we're always recruiting, huge on recruiting, and just from my perspective, more females recruiting. We don't have a lot of females in DEA, and it'd be nice to see more females, but always recruiting. There's a recruiter that I don't know as far as like when the open applications are and stuff like that, but that's what they're good at answering. So you can always find out for sure.
Okay. And I know you have an internship program, but it's because of COVID, nobody's doing internship. Nobody's doing the academies. Do they have an academy, a citizens academy? Like the FBI does, the Border Patrol does.
I honestly don't know the answer to that. It'd be great, but if not,
let's start one.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. We actually did one back in Florida, and as a local, and I was part of that. It was nice for people to see what we actually do.
And I think that helps people understand both sides of the coin. You need to understand what these people are out there doing, and how everything they do, every drug bust they make, saves lives.
Right. And sometimes they don't understand the reason why we do things when there's a reason why we have to do things. And so sometimes that helps to put things in perspective too.
Oh, I went through the Border Patrol Academy. It was fascinating and it was awesome. We even got to drive the cars and lights and sirens, and it was fun. I would never make it because I'd have my lights and sirens on all the time.
I don't blame you. I totally get it.
Where's Sherry? Oh, I hear her. She's over there. So
at least you're easy to find.
That's right. So, yeah, and I got a new appreciation for everything that they were doing because, you know, I just had no idea. And I'm from a background that would supposedly understand this. I had no idea. But I want to thank you for coming on. Ooh.
Thank you for having me.
And I hope any of our listeners out there are inspired to get involved with law enforcement. It's a great career. It's very rewarding. You're out there saving lives and helping people. Mm-hmm. And next week, who do we have coming on next week? We're going to be talking about the incident that happened in D.C. next week. And until then, shop local, stay safe. Michelle, thank you so much for coming on and opening your eyes.
Thank you, Mr. I appreciate you.
Okay, I appreciate you. Bye-bye.